We can be completely unaware of our surroundings. Did you notice the woman walking to her car? Or the guys chatting? The briefcase? The woman with the stroller? Did you notice the man following you?
Awareness and prevention are your best options. But when violence is unavoidable, you must find your voice. Find your fight. Find it with us at the VPD Women's Personal Safety Workshops.
Did you know that assaults against women are one of the few crimes that have not decreased in Metro Vancouver? If it were to happen to you, do you know what to do? Do you know how to reduce the likelihood of being a victim? Do you know what to do if you suspect you are in trouble? As we saw in the ad that opened this segment, being aware of your surroundings is a vital component of your safety. Once a month, a dedicated group of female officers conducts a women's personal safety workshop for free and for women only. It's a program filled with life-saving information you've never heard anywhere else before. We invited Inspector Colleen Yee of the Vancouver Police Department to join us for a conversation that matters about strategies that allow you to survive in the presence of mortal danger.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Inspector Yee, welcome.
Thank you.
So you have gone and created a women's personal safety program. It's like a workshop. What led you to do this? What was happening that you said, okay, women don't have the necessary awareness or skills that they need to be able to get away from a dangerous situation?
How it came about really wasn't how I or my team figured it out. It was actually the women in the community that sort of facilitated the organic development of the program. And then someone within the unit thought, wouldn't it be neat to have a self-defense component to it? And I was part of the tactical training unit, the unit that helps train our police officers on how to use force. And they approached me and then retired now Sergeant Clive Milligan to put together a quick sort of demonstration. After that program was done, afterwards, women stayed behind. They came and spoke to us. They wanted to know where they could get more of this. There were so many requests for this workshop. So a couple of us sat down. We thought, there are so many women making requests for this workshop so that they can educate themselves and empower themselves. How can we not try and address this need? And it was important that it be women, because we found that when we were teaching, a lot of women came to us from the community saying that they had tried other sort of self-defense programs before and attended different types of martial arts studios, but there was always this sort of intimidation of training with men. Mm-hmm. And also some of the programs that they've gone to, they were complicated and hard to learn. So our goal was to create a program that was utilizing concepts and concepts that were easy to learn, movements that they already knew how to do. And that's how the program sort of evolved. And so to this date, since the official sort of creation of the program in 2013 till now, we've had almost 2,000 women participate.
Wow. So there are clearly areas in the city where you're probably more vulnerable because you and a number of other potential victims are traveling at the same time or in the same location. Transit is a real concern, isn't it? And yet we see so many people with their face buried in their device these days that they may not even be aware of the potential threats that are around them. How important is it to look up, pay attention to what's going on around you, pay attention to the people who are around you?
So what we've learned in sort of like predatorial behavior is that when a predator or an offender is looking for a target, the most vulnerable time for a person is in that period of transition. So leaving point A to go to point B. Mm-hmm. That space in between is deemed as the most opportunistic time for target selection. So if you are, whether you are in transit as like the bus or SkyTrain, or whether you're in transit walking from your office building, school, or whatever, to the bus stop, to your car, to your home, mm-hmm. that period of time when you're in transition is the most critical time to be situationally aware. Mm-hmm. That is the time when you do need to look up and see who's standing around you, who may be in the group with you, who's sitting beside you, who's driving mm-hmm. in your neighborhood. And then once you acknowledge who those people are, then you can start sort of evaluating. Are they friendly? Are they giving off energy that causes me unease? That gives you the time to sort of formulate how you're going to behave in that environment of transit.
So I've got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break.
All right.
We'll be right back. Sorry for the interruption, but I need your help. I'm asking you to support the show by becoming a patron. That means pledging $1 per show. Conversations is a unique program. There's no grandstanding, no arguing, no yelling. Instead, I sit down with people who have unique insights, specialized knowledge, and experiences that inform and enlighten. And we do this on an incredibly limited budget with a very small crew. Well, this is my office and it's where I edit the show. And then once it's ready, we give it away. You know, so many different websites around the world are carrying the show, but they get it for free. They don't pay us. So I'm asking you to pledge $1 per show by going to patreon.com/conversationsthatmatter. Thanks. We want to keep producing conversations, and with your help, we can. Now let's get back to the show. So how important is it to pay attention to that instinctive reaction to being uneasy?
How many times have you ever got onto a bus, a SkyTrain, you're sitting in a auditorium or any place of mass gathering, and someone walks in a room or sits down beside you or stands beside you, and they give you that creepy, crawly, heebie-jeebie feeling.
Yeah.
The hair on the back of your neck stand up. That feeling is nature's essential gift to us for survival. It alerts us to that something is not quite right. It may not be life-threatening, but something's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And we encourage people to trust that, what we call a gut instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Trust that feeling that nature gave you that alerted you to that something's not quite right. And then if you're feeling that you need to move, you move. If you feel like you need to look, then look.
You talked earlier about target selection. I mean, it's almost as though you're bringing it down to like the, you know, the cold facts of you've got a predator and you've got a victim and they're picking a potential victim. What is it that they're looking for?
So it's very primal, whether it's human beings or whether it's animals in nature. When a predator, again, for lack of a better phrase, because again, we're bringing it down to the essential elements of nature here. Predators look for what we call an easy target. And that may include elements such as age, size, health, awareness. If you can imagine, if you ever watch those wildlife movies or wildlife shows on TV, and they're shooting in on the watering hole at the Serengeti, say. You see all of these sort of herd animals around the watering hole, and on the periphery, you see all of the predatorial animals. And those carnivores are looking at the group of animals that are at the watering hole, and what are they looking for? They're looking for the animal that is well, who they perceive they can outstrength, they're stronger than, they're faster. Likelihood of them getting hurt is minimal because mm-hmm. no one wants to get hurt, and whether they're paying attention or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you translate that into the human realm, and that's exactly what the human predator is looking for. Someone he or she thinks that is weaker than they are, easily overpowered. They're not paying attention, so the element of surprise is on the side of the predator.
Mm-hmm.
And that the predator, chances of getting hurt is minimal to none.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about that? You know.
So again, what do you do about that?
Like, how do you defend yourself against?
So you bring that back. Bring that back to the sort of the animal kingdom. Who are not? Which animals there are not getting selected by the predators? By the lions, the hyenas, the cheetahs that are waiting in the periphery.
Well, the ones who are not putting themselves in harm's way, and they're aware.
And how are they doing that? Exactly, they're aware. They're looking up. They're looking around to see what's in their environment. They appear strong. They appear alert. And they know when something is amiss because, again, they're situationally aware. Then now you translate that into the human realm. Having spoken to many, many suspects and accused in my field of work, sometimes we will ask them, you know, how did you come to select the person that you did in this case that now we're investigating and that you're charged with? And most times they're quite honest in, you know, once the rapport is built. They say, well, for every person that we choose, we pass many people over based on the way they carry themselves, based on their level of situational awareness and their physical, what we perceive their physical ability to be, because we don't want to get hurt.
Right. They just want to win. So how important is it to look at people that you have any misgivings or uneasy feelings about? Like, to actually look at them.
Acknowledging someone's presence is important because it's, again, it takes the element of surprise away. Say the predator chose me. They chose me because they have made an evaluation of my physical abilities, my situational awareness, my ability to fight back. So the element of surprise is taken away if I acknowledge their presence. And again, acknowledging their presence for a lot of people can be a scary thing. Mm-hmm. You're walking down the street, you feel someone following behind you, your heart rate goes up, you're nervous, you don't want to look, you just want to go as fast as you can so you can get away from whatever's making you feel uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is giving off a certain type of energy that the offender is basically feeding on.
Mm-hmm.
They can pick up fear, they can pick up uncertainty, and that actually fuels their drive even more. Once you stop and you turn around and you look at them and acknowledge them, it interrupts that energy flow that they were essentially feeding on and getting energy from and getting more and more courage from.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, predators who are sitting there looking for a target is receiving that information and they're making evaluations based on what they're seeing. Someone who's passing someone else, if they look away, it shows to them a sign of submissiveness. Avoidance, and for them that's a weakness that they can capitalize on. We mitigate that by practicing looking at people when it's not stressful. Mm-hmm. I encourage participants in our workshop, if you don't already, next time when you walk out onto the street and you're approaching somebody and you feel like you want to look away because that's how habitually mm-hmm. you behave, if this is a non-stressful situation, start making it a habit to mm-hmm. look at someone, look at their face. And it's not a hard stare or glare, it's just a casual, gentle look of acknowledgement that you exist, that's great, and you pass by.
Mm-hmm.
So if they start practicing in a non-stressful environment at a time when they do need that skill, it'll be more readily available.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about the element of surprise, but you're talking about it from the perspective of the person who is the perpetrator. How important is the element of surprise if you are a potential target?
If a potential offender, has chosen me to be a target, remember, he's chosen me because he has perceived that I am going to be, quote unquote, an easy win mm-hmm. based on my gender, perhaps, age, size, physical level of fitness, the environment,
mm-hmm.
and my situational awareness.
Right.
So all those he or she has calculated and the equation has pointed to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when they do engage in whatever act that they are going to do against me, in this case, let's make it simple, they're going to attack me and they're going to try and hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing they're going to expect is that I am going to utilize concepts and tools that will protect myself. And in protecting myself, causing them injury, mm-hmm. causing them to change their mindset, to worry about their own sense of safety
So I had the opportunity to sit in on one of the workshops, and initially I thought, oh, okay, here we go, another self-survival, do this, do that. You know, I've seen it in the movies and so on. This isn't like that at all. And I walked out of there feeling more empowered about being able to protect myself than anything that I had ever experienced. And I know that you want to be careful about not sharing what those techniques are, but it was extraordinary that what you were saying is, you, and you put it politely before you want to deliver an injury that's going to make that person forget about you and think about themselves. How important is that?
Mindset is critical. Critical for the person who is the target, and it's also critical for the person who's the offender. The offender's mindset is they have a goal. The goal in this case, and just to also clarify, Stu, our workshop deals with the type of violence that is unavoidable. But on the spectrum of violence, we deal with the extreme end of violence in our workshop. So the kind of violence where the offender's sole goal is to seriously, seriously hurt me or kill me. So the concepts that we teach, the mindset that we encourage for people to develop, is to deal with that extreme end of violence, not the other stuff. It's not
robbery. You're not being polite, you're not playing by the rules.
Because it's that extreme end. We're talking where your life is in absolute danger of grievous bodily harm or death. So when we talk about mindset, the mindset of the person who's perpetrating that crime, that's their goal. If their goal is to seriously hurt or kill me, I have to survive this, win this. The only way I can do that is I have to change the mindset of the person who wants to harm me.
Mm-hmm.
If dialogue is not going to work in this case, if everything that I've tried is not going to try to stop this person, the only way you can change a person's mindset whose sole goal is to hurt or kill me is that I have to change their mindset by getting them to think about their own safety, their own sense of well-being. And the only way to do that is we have to create a debilitating injury that is not sustainable. So we have to cause an injury so great, it's not based on pain, it's actually based on human biomechanics, so that they all of a sudden think, you know, why can't I stand up? Or why can't I breathe? It changes their mind, their focus from the target to themselves. And once that mind shift occurs, it creates a window of time and opportunity for the person who is selected as a target to ensure that they have enough time to get away.
It's very effective. I've never seen anything like it. When I came out of there, I was telling people that I know, like I was like, as I said, empowered. And I was telling people that I know about this, and they're going, oh my gosh, I want my wife, I want my daughter, I want my niece. Like, I want them to take this program because you share techniques, and I'm being careful not to share them right now because I know that there's so much about this element of surprise. The thing that I found interesting is, and you don't have to be big to be able to deliver the kind of injury that you're talking about that can ensure that you survive. Do you start hearing back from people who have now been potential victims and the techniques have worked?
Our goal, again, when we started our conversation here, was I wanted to ensure that the concepts that we taught were easily learnable and retainable, and that anybody, relatively anybody, can do it. So we've had over almost 2,000 women now partake in this, and we've had several participants come back to us now with, for lack of a better phrase, testimonials of their experience after having taken our workshop. One of the most, there's two that come to mind in particular. One lady was a survival sex trade worker in the Downtown East Side. And our workshop was offered through one of her life skills program. She took our program, and about 2 weeks later, she was in the Downtown East Side working, and she was attacked by a violent individual. She came back to us probably about a week later, and she shared her story. She said that in the lane, this fellow grabbed her from behind, had a knife, cut her face. The first thing she did was she remembered the words and phrases that we had taught her at the workshop, and she started employing those tactics. And she said, in her words, once I started, it all fell together. And she did this, and she did that, and she was able to get away safely.
And that's after just attending a workshop.
This was a 2-hour workshop.
Yeah.
Which said to us that what we were teaching was actually practically working.
Yeah.
For these people who have had no sort of previous martial arts training or tactical training whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And she was a smaller lady, too. And so once we heard that testimony, a bunch of us sat around, we thought, you know what, it's good. The concepts that we're teaching actually are getting employed properly by these participants, again, with no training,
mm-hmm.
And physically not, you know, your stereotypical martial artist.
No.
You know, however you envision that.
Yeah.
So we knew that what we were teaching was, it was righteous. And again, for our instructors, all the instructors on my team, they've all been in real fights. It is so when we teach these concepts, we know they work because we've either employed them or we've seen it employed and we've seen the results of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now to have regular people who were at the hands of, you know, a violent crime, use it and then come back and tell us how successful they were,
mm-hmm.
really invigorates us,
yeah.
To know what we're giving is actually working. So,
I was impressed at how simple and elegant many of the moves are. As you say, they take into account biomechanics. So be aware, move to avoid, have a plan, and then know how to carry it out.
Know how to carry out your plan. So if you do have a plan, yes, you need to sort of practice that plan in your head. Because like in sports, if you practice something in your head, your body doesn't realize it's not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do really need to do it, the marriage of that happens easier. Also, if you believe that something is not quite right, you're feeling something is not quite right, someone might be giving you, again, that gut instinct of uneasiness, you feel like you're being followed or someone looks suspicious, don't hesitate to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're there for. We want to show up and determine whether, you know, this is a safe environment or not. Because
yeah.
We, too, are in the business of prevention, not just, you know, catching them in the act.
It was the most extraordinary few hours that I spent watching you share these tips and techniques that I think can go a long way to ensure that somebody will survive what is potentially an incredibly violent or deadly incident. So thank you very much for coming in and sharing that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.